Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Princeton University Press Ideas Podcast, a joint production of Princeton University Press and the New Books Network. I'm Mark Klobis, and today I'm speaking with Jonathan Mark Gribitz, author of the book Reading Herzl and Beirut, The PLO Effort to Know the Enemy. Jonathan, welcome to the New Books Network.
Thank you so much, Mark, for having me.
Well, thank you for agreeing to be on our podcast. I was wondering if you could start us off by telling our listeners something about yourself.
Sure. Well, I'm a scholar of modern Palestinian and Israeli history at Princeton University, where I'm a professor in the Near Eastern Studies Department and in the program in Judaic Studies. And I also direct the Institute for the Transregional Study of the Contemporary Middle East, North Africa, and Central Asia. That's a mouthful that we instead just call TRI. And I also edit the academic journal of the Association for Jewish Studies, the AJS Review. And my first book, which was based on my dissertation, was called Defining Neighbors, Religion, Race, and the Early Zionist Arab Encounter. And that book focused on the mutual perceptions of Zionists and Arabs in Palestine and the broader region at the end of the Ottoman period.
What led you to undertake a book about the PLO Research Center and its contribution to the Palestinian thinking about Israel and Zionism?
Well, I came across the PLO Research Center entirely by accident. I was on a fellowship at the University of Toronto, and I was taking a break from working on that first book that I just mentioned, and took a stroll through Robarts Library in an area of the library that was filled with books about Jewish history that were written mainly in English or in Hebrew or in some other European languages. And a book caught my eye because the spine of it had text in Arabic. I looked closely at it and saw that that book was called El Fikra Esahioniya, which means the Zionist idea. Now, the Zionist idea is the title of a book that I knew well. It's a book that was compiled and edited by Rabbi Dr. Arthur Hertzberg in 1959 in English. And it's a compendium of Zionist sources from like the classics of the Zionist pantheon. I took this book off the shelf. I said, wow, that's funny that there's a book in Arabic by the same name. Then I started flipping through it and realized that this wasn't just a book by the same name in Arabic. It seems to have been, a translation of Hertzberg's book in Arabic. I looked at the front cover and saw, looked to see who had written it, and didn't see Hertzberg's name anywhere, but found several other Arab names. And I looked at the bottom of the page and to find out who had published it, and saw that it was published by an institute that I had never heard of, namely the PLO Research Center, the Palestine Liberation Organization Research Center, published this book in 1970. And it was that sort of chance encounter with this institute that produced this book in Arabic in 1970 of this the classics of Zionism that introduced me to the topic of the PLO Research Center. And then it just sort of snowballed into a bigger project about that institution.
I was wondering if you could start us off in talking about the PLO Research Center by describing something about its origins, its mission, and what it was that it was doing. Was it focusing mainly on translation? Was it doing was it doing historical study? Was it doing contemporary study? What exactly did it set out to do, and what did it do over the course of the first 18 years of its existence?
Great. Well, the PLO Research Center was the result of a specific call in the PLO Constitution of 1964 to create a department for research and specialized institutes. And so the founding chairman of the PLO, a man named Ahmed Shukairi, sought to establish this department immediately after the establishment of the PLO itself. He tried taking a shortcut initially by asking intellectuals who had already established an institution called the Institute for Palestine Studies, in particular Walid Khalidi and Konstantin Zurek, And he asked them if they would just incorporate the Institute for Palestine Studies that they had already created into the PLO. But Khalidi and Zurayk refused on the basis of the argument that their institute was meant to be independent of any political party or government. And so Shukairi was left to find someone to establish an institute from scratch. And so he did. He found a Palestinian intellectual from the Tiberias area, who was a Palestinian refugee named Fayez Sayegh, who had already made a name for himself, not only in academia, but also as a very articulate, eloquent advocate for the Palestinian cause, even and especially in English. And he assigned Fayez Sayegh to establish this research center. And so he did, as Sayegh did, and ran it for about a year before his younger brother, Enis Sayegh, took it over. And Enis ran it for about 10 years. Then after Enis, it was briefly led by the famed Palestinian poet Mahmoud Darwish. And then finally, in its years in Beirut, which ended in 1983, it was led by a Israeli citizen, a Palestinian intellectual and activist named Sabri Gerius. Now, you ask, what did the PLO Research Center do? Well, it was tasked with studying the Palestinian cause or issue or question. The term that was used in Arabic was al-qadiyya filistiniya, and it was meant to do so from all its aspects. So a central task, and the one that interested me most because of my background in studying, you know, the mutual perceptions of Zionists and Arabs in Palestine, was the project to learn about Judaism, Zionism, and Israel, which the center's directors called a project of knowing the enemy. And so the sort of crux of my book, the second section of the three parts, offers close readings and contextualizations of different topics that the center's researchers explored in the category of sort of studying the enemy. So each chapter there starts with like one particular book that the PLO Research Center published during its years in Beirut, and then sort of expands out from there into exploring themes that those books lead us toward.
It's very interesting to read about that work because, the first glance, it sounds like, oh, they're doing propaganda. And there was definitely an element of that that you described, but you described they're also doing a lot of serious study. They're not just treating this as we're just going to churn out a lot of studies. You describe a lot of sophistication, a lot of nuance, and not necessarily, you know, they're not always on the same page with this. I mean, that sometimes the studies there's a bit of a disagreement about that reflects the independence that a lot of the members of the research center had in terms of their output.
Yes, that's absolutely right. These were serious intellectuals. Of course, they were intellectuals with a particular political bent and part of an organization, working within an organization that certainly had a political agenda. But these were serious intellectuals who were trained scholars. They often had masters or PhDs from either the American University of Beirut or from European or American universities. And they did, you know, as you say, you know, there one could see elements of propaganda in some of the work, but this wasn't this is what's interesting. The PLO Research Center wasn't the PLO's propaganda arm. The PLO did have propaganda arm, but this was not it. This was an organization that was designed to do serious study and to learn about, among other things, the enemy. And so I'll give you like one example, and that is the book that the PLO Research Center published about the Talmud and its relationship to Zionism. So the Talmud, this classic work of Jewish law and stories from around the fifth century, CE. It was a subject of great fascination and conspiracy theories among many, both in Europe and also through Europe in into the Arab world. And the PLO, the PLO Research Center in particular, decided that instead of just assuming that we understand what the Talmud is and that we all understand that it is this work of conspiracy and conspiratorial theories about how Jews can control the world and how they can take over not only Palestine, but the rest of the world. Why don't we, instead of just reading and relying upon European anti-Semitic literature about the Talmud, why don't we actually read it? And so they did. They assigned a scholar, a man named Asad Razouk, to sit with the English translation that was available to them, the Sansino edition of the Babylonian Talmud, to sit and read it and try to understand what it was all about. And so they published a book that was a book of three parts. One, the first part was an attack on previous Arabic literature about the Talmud that Razouk insisted was based on fabrications and misunderstandings of the Talmud by people who hadn't actually read it. The second part of the book is a tractate by tractate analysis and summary of the Talmud in great detail that is based both on the introductions of the Sansino edition of the Talmud, but also on close readings of the Talmudic texts themselves. And then finally, the third part of this book is a section on the relationship between Zionism and the Talmud. And it offers a really nuanced and sophisticated assessment on the ways in which the Talmud in certain aspects would could be used to support Zionism, but in other ways in which the Talmud actually seems to work against Zionism. And that's the kind of thing that I find to be so interesting in the sorts of work that the PLO Research Center did. Now, the argument that that these scholars who were working on the Talmud and Zionism book were making certainly had a purpose of supporting the Palestinian cause, but it was this. It was, hey, we Arabs and Palestinians need to stop employing anti-Semitism in making the case for the Palestinian cause and the case against Zionism. We actually don't need that. Our cause, the Palestinian cause, is just, and we don't need to sully our cause by employing the language, the terminology, the assumptions, the literature of anti-Semitism in order to help it. In fact, that only harms it.
It's one of the things that I think, for me, made it interesting in terms of what you were doing, because at its core, what you're seeing with the PLO Research Center is the idea that the intellectual debate matters. That this isn't just about, resistance, this isn't just about violence, but that there is an intellectual case that can be made, and there is an element of propaganda to this. But as you described, their audience is not, I mean, they're not speaking to Americans. They're not speaking to people in Europe. They're part of the audience, but they're also speaking to their fellow Arabs outside of Palestine. And they're not just talking about what should be done about Israel, but, and I'm thinking here about your chapter about which I thought was one of the most was unexpected ones for me when I was reading the book, which was the chapter about Jewish women in occupied Palestine, and the notion in the 1960s and 70s of, in effect, like a feminist argument for Palestinian liberation. This idea that they're also trying to, in a participate in this discourse and shape the idea of what Palestinian liberation means, what it is in essence, not just what they're fighting against, but also what they're fighting for.
Yeah, thank you for that, Mark. The PLO Research Center, as you say, published a book called in Arabic, The Jewish Woman in Occupied Palestine. And there is one of the cases in which you see subtly but pretty clearly that some thinkers and intellectuals among the PLO Research Center staff and scholars were looking at Zionism not only as an enemy, but also as a model. And there, yes, they were showing how the Zionists made very good use of the 50% of the population, women, whom these Arab and Palestinian scholars argued Palestinians weren't making, or and Arab revolutionaries generally weren't making good use of, that is to say, their own women. And so, yes, the this work on the Jewish woman in occupied Palestine, on the one hand, doesn't glamorize the role of women within Zionism. It shows the very sexist language that Theodor Herzl, the founder of the Zionist Congress and the Zionist organization, used in his writings, both in his diaries and in his more public writings. Theodor Herzl certainly used sexist language and assumptions there, but they also then show how in the kibbutzim, in the Israeli government, the Israelis and the Zionists before them, before the state, made very serious use of their women. And so this is a sort of call to Palestinians and other Arab revolutionaries that they can and need to do the same if they are to be able to put up a good fight against the Zionists.
And that debate, that engagement, I think speaks to the surprise in a sense for me that this was not quite as visible as you might think. Because it was not just studying the enemy, but it was also offering justification. And this gets into how Israel viewed the PLO Research Center, and I know we're kind of, you know, glossing over those 17 years where they were operating primarily in Beirut, because you go into so much more detail about it. But you have this institution which has this academic purpose, and yet what happens in 1982 becomes a you see an argument being made for what the PLRC is doing that is not inaccurate. I mean, as you point out, that they were also providing a level of intelligence work for the PLO, but that how that contributes to why it is that this archive is seized, why it's likely that the PLO Research Center is bombed a year later, and how it contributes to why Israel responds to the PLO Research Center the way that it does when it goes into Lebanon in 1982.
Yeah, so in mid-September 1982, the Israel Defense Forces, the IDF, invaded West Beirut, as you say. And of course, the most infamous events of those first days in mid-September were the massacres conducted by Lebanese Christian phalangist forces who were allied with Israel, those massacres of Palestinians in the refugee camps of Sabra and Shatila. And at the same time as the massacres, though, members of the IDF's Golani Brigade reached and then stormed the PLO Research Center's headquarters. And when they found the library and archive of the center, they radioed to an intelligence unit that had been designed in order to assess materials that were taken during wartime. That unit then quickly saw what they had there in the center and loaded the full library and archive onto trucks, IDF trucks, and shipped them south to Israel. The following month, in October 1982, during the Jewish holiday of Sukkot, an intelligence reservist officer named Mati Steinberg entered this hangar where the IDF had stored the center's materials, and he produced a quick report on what he found during this cursory review. Now, of course, during this period, the greatest uproar in the world, concerned with good reason, the massacres at Sabra and Shatila. But certain intellectuals and institutions, spearheaded in particular by the Palestinian American academic, intellectual, scholar, and activist Edward Said in the pages of the New York Times, but also UNESCO, the Society of American Archivists, the Swedish Parliament, and others. They were all outraged by the idea of Israel having engaged in this theft, as they saw it, of an apparent cultural treasure during a war. Now, so they went after Israel publicly for having engaged in this war crime, as they saw it. And now others, both in the Israeli government and the Israeli press and beyond, including, I found, the American Jewish author Cynthia Ozick, these and many others defended Israel's seizure of these materials, as they argue, just as you said, that the academic nature of the PLO Research Center was a mere mask for the true work of the center, which was in providing military intelligence for the PLO. Now, these apologists had real evidence to back up their assertions, because the PLO Research Center actually did produce at least a few publications that could be regarded, to my mind, fairly as either military intelligence, or at least they were explicitly aimed at assisting militants in operations against Israeli targets. I mean, I say that they were explicitly aimed because they said so in their introductions. But these militant-oriented publications were by far the minority among the hundreds of books, pamphlets, journal issues, and so on that the PLO Research Center published in its years in Beirut. But as you say, there was a great debate in the pages of the New York Times, in the Israeli press, in the Arab press, all about what was the PLO Research Center and why would it have been that Israel would have taken it? Was it a cultural treasure, an archive of Palestinian culture? Was it a mask for military intelligence? Was it something in between? And so I explore those issues in the book before getting into the ultimate prisoner exchange, which perhaps we'll have the chance to talk about.
That's actually what I'd like to talk to next. And here's where we get to the point in your book where you put on your Dear Stalker cap and started answering what to, is the question that you end with, which is what happened to this archive that the IDF seized and that they turned over to the PLO as part of a prisoner exchange in 1983.
Yeah, so it's an amazing story. It's absolutely fascinating. With the international pressure building as it continued to build over the course of 82 into 83, and then at the same time, a consensus that I found within the Israeli state and IDF archives, that a consensus among Israeli intelligence that there was actually nothing in the materials that they had taken from the PLO Research Center that they regarded to be of what they called operational value among those materials. The Israelis ultimately agreed to return the center's library and archive as part of a prisoner exchange. Six Israeli soldiers in exchange for about 4,000 Arab prisoners and the PLO Research Center. And this is, as far as I know, though I hope your listeners will think of other examples, but this is, as far as I know, the only case in which a library was returned as part of a prisoner exchange. So in November 1983, about 14 months after the center had been confiscated, the materials were loaded onto the cargo holds of several Air France planes that were carrying about 1,000 prisoners off to Algeria. Now, within the couple of years after those Air France planes landed in Algeria and sent the materials to Palestine Liberation Army camps in Algeria, the center's final director in the Beirut years, that is Sabri Girious, and his colleague Samih Shabib, they flew to Algeria and, according to their own reports, confirmed that the materials were indeed there. But that was as I think really the last confirmed sighting that was in the 1980s of the PLO Research Center library and archive. There have been rumors and some vague reports, but as far as I know, no one today knows where all those wooden boxes of materials now are located, or if they're located anywhere at all. But the only materials from the Beirut years of the center that I've been able to locate, that is the only materials that the center had collected during the Beirut years. Of course, what they published is mainly, you know, very easily accessible in big university libraries or in state libraries. But of the materials that they had collected on their shelves, I've been able to locate a few books that individual Israeli soldiers snatched from the center while they were in Beirut in 1982, and a cache of some 70 plus books that, with a clue from my wonderful colleague Hillel Cohen, and with the help of terrific librarians Yaniv Korem Levy and Raquel Yukalis, somehow made their way into the stacks of the National Library of Israel in Jerusalem. And so while I failed in what I saw as a quest to find the center's library and archive, I did find, you know, a small, very small percentage of the books that they had there. I did find, and this is something that I'd love to emphasize here, not only to readers, but also to fellow scholars, I found so much material that the center published, and such that my book really only scratched the surface. And I hope that the book will serve as a kind of invitation to other scholars to explore many other aspects of the history of Palestinians and of Judaism, Zionism, and Israel that one can learn through the work of the PLO Research Center.
So you're not interested in any leads if people actually know what happened to the boxes?
I am very interested in any leads. I would be eager to hear them. Absolutely.
So definitely email you if somebody has a clue or a lead.
Please do.
We appreciate the time you've taken to speak with us. But before we go, could you tell us what you're working on now?
Sure. Well, just the book hasn't even come out as we're speaking. So I am in some ways just talking about the book in various fora. But my next research project, I hope to be about telling a single story of the relationship between religion and nationalism in the cases of the Palestinians and the Zionists or Israelis. That is to say, not a sort of side-by-side story of how religion and nationalism interact, but a singular story that is relational in the ways in which the religions and nationalisms of the Jews in Palestine and Israel, and the Palestinians, Christians and Muslims in Palestine and Israel, have developed over time, and the interactions between them.
That sounds like a very complicated project. I wish you the best of luck with it.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Well, thank you very much. I hope you have a wonderful day, Jonathan.